I want to personally invite you to join me and all the other Brock stars for this year's 13th live and in-person Plan Stock event outside of Asheville, North Carolina, in the little town of Black Mountain. It's 1,500 acres, is loaded with wildlife, trees, trails, streams. It is a nature wonderland. And what's also a wonderland are all the incredible speakers that you get to hang with all weekend long, like Jane and Ann Esselstyn, Dr. Will Bolshewitz of Fiberfueled, Carly Bodrug, Miss Plant U, Dr. Gemma Newman is over from the UK. We have Dr. Dawn Musalem from the Mayo Clinic, John Mackey, the ex-CEO of Whole Food Market Stores, myself, Brian Hart, and a special appearance by the Plant Bros. Here's the kicker. All these Brock stars are there from Friday till Sunday, and they want to rub elbows with all of you, whether it's over buffets of Plant Strong fare for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, whether it's going on an afternoon hike, a swim, pickleball, frisbee golf, kickball, cornhole, dancing. We're having live music. It's all there in this fun weekend extravaganza that we affectionately call Plant Stock. Simply go to liveplantstrong.com and then click on Plant Stock 2024 and grab yourself a ticket before they sell out. See you there. If you haven't checked out our all-new meal planner, it is gangbusters. It's like a full-time Plant Strong kitchen assistant that's waiting for you if you need inspiration or quick meal ideas to jump into action. The new and improved meal planner includes tons of exclusive discounts on partner brands like Vitamix, Ninja Creamy, and, of course, Plant Strong Foods. Plus, we've included extra special content that you're not going to find anywhere else, with hundreds of masterful oil-free recipes that your family will love, along with the ability to search by ingredient. You'll have less waste in the kitchen and save time in all of your meal planning. And our save menus allow you to keep all of your favorites at your fingertips with none of the Pinterest boards or blog posts that you need to scroll through. Take a 2-week trial when you enter the code STARTFRESH and visit PlanStrong.com and click on the meal planner to learn more.
I'm Rip Esselstyn, and welcome to the Plant Strong podcast. The mission at Plant Strong is to further the advancement of all things within the plant-based movement. We advocate for the scientifically proven benefits of plant-based living and envision a world that universally understands, promotes, and prescribes plants as a solution to empowering your health, enhancing your performance, restoring the environment, and becoming better guardians to the animals we share this planet with. We welcome you wherever you are on your Plant Strong journey, and I hope that you enjoy the show.
I love a good creative name, and this one is right up there. Today, I speak with entrepreneur, author, and photographer Jackie Ackerberg, also known as, drumroll, Jack Fruitful on all of her social channels. Of course, how did Jackie come up with the name Jack Fruitful is one of the things that she gets asked quite a lot. And I love her intentions behind the name. As she says on her website, jackfruitful.com, the name Jack Fruitful Kitchen was inspired by four different things. First, her name is Jackie. Second, one of her favorite ingredients for vegan cooking is jackfruit. 3, the ability to be full and satiated eating clean, whole plant-based food. And 4th and lastly, the goal to live a more fruitful life. As you're going to learn today, Jackie does live a fruitful life, testing and creating recipes on her website and in her book, The Clean Vegan Cookbook, which features over 60 whole food plant-based recipes that will satisfy every craving, yes, including jackfruit. But believe me, when you look at the gigantic burger on the cover of her book, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Jackie's journey to plants as a solution to her health problems is one that is very inspiring, and food definitely has the power to heal, and you'll learn what some of those recipes were that helped her in her own healing journey. Please welcome the clean, the classy, the wholesome Jackie Ackerberg. Jackie Ackerberg, welcome to the Plant Strong Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Rip.
My pleasure. We have never met, have we?
No, we haven't, but I have been a fan of yours for a while and have been familiar with you, but this is our first time visiting.
It certainly is, and I look forward to it. For those of you that don't know who Jackie is a recipe creator. She is a food lover and photographer, and she has a rather large Instagram account under the name, what's your handle there? Is it the
Jack Fruitful Kitchen?
Jack, say that again.
Jack Fruitful Kitchen. Yes.
Yeah. And you just came out with a cookbook called The Clean Vegan that I really want to dive into with you. Of course, I love anything that says clean vegan and what that represents. And I think we have a lot of overlap in our philosophies.
For sure. We definitely do.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But before we dive in, Jackie, I'd like to get to know you a little bit. So tell me, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Des Moines, Iowa, right in the center of the country.
Wow. And so do you have siblings or are you a lone child?
I'm actually an only child. Grew up with a puppy as a brother. So that's it, but just me otherwise.
Uh-huh. And what was your puppy's name?
Gracie as a kid, then Jackson, now Buddy. So always golden retriever.
That's fun. Okay. We always had black Labrador retrievers growing up as well.
It's kind of like if you have one type of dog as a family, that's kind of like your go-to for life, right?
Very much. And so did you enjoy growing up in Des Moines?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a great place to grow up. And honestly, I still live here now. And watching it change over the past, 10 to 15 years has just been pretty impressive and profound the way it's grown as a small city. Everything from the dining options to the people. It's a cool place to live and great place to grow up.
So when you say like it's grown, like give me an example. Like, do you know what the population is now and what it was 10 years ago?
I guess I don't know what it was 10 years ago, but now I think with Metro, it's about 800,000. So still not huge by any means, but Des Moines itself, like where I live or my husband and I live, which is very close to the downtown area, is just bustling with people, lots of new restaurants, lots of new bars and patios and little shops, just a lot of up and coming stuff.
And do you have some pretty intense winters there?
We do, yes. this year it didn't seem as bad, but Christmas Eve, our pipes froze and they stayed frozen. We didn't have water in a part of our house for like 3 days because it was negative 24. So it gets intense, but the snow's pretty and you just get through it.
Right. Well, I've heard a quote, there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothes. And so if you have the right outfit, you're set, right?
That's 100% true. And I definitely agree.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you like to do in Des Moines? Do you go skiing? Do you get out much?
Yes. We are really blessed with a great cycling system. So for like road biking, we have so many bike trails. We can hop on right at our house and bike probably about 40 miles in any direction with a great trail system, all covered by canopies of trees, lots of wildlife. In the winter, cross-country skiing, it's fairly flat around here. It's not as flat as people think, but not a lot of downhill skiing, just cross-country. There's some good spots to go boating or just lots of good restaurants as well. So,
mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever been to Des Moines. I'm trying to think. Do you guys have a Whole Food Market store there?
We do.
Okay, then I have been there because I've been to every Whole Food Market store when I was...
Every single one?
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah, because, for 10 years, I was a Whole Food Market ambassador, traveling around, pontificating to anyone who would listen about all the virtues of a whole food plant strong lifestyle.
Absolutely.
It's funny because I was for 10 years, I probably went to, all 500 plus stores, not only in the States, but Canada and also the UK. So it kind of is all melded.
A blur. Together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I do remember going to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and doing a triathlon there and just remembering how gorgeous it was. Are you guys near Coeur d'Alene?
In Iowa.
Oh my God. Oh my gosh. I totally got the eyes confused.
This happens all the time.
No wonder I'm like, okay.
When you said skiing, I was like,
Yeah.
Where does he think I live? But no, this is
that
so
is hilarious. Yeah, I'm talking about, water skiing. Come on.
Yeah.
Oh man. Okay.
That's amazing.
I feel like a total fool. All right.
It happens. You're not the first person, I promise. So don't feel foolish.
That is funny. So tell me, you and your husband are self-employed, right?
Yes.
And so what do you guys do being self-employed?
Yeah. So we have a few different, my husband is, I almost like to call him a serial entrepreneur. He's always coming up with new ideas and wanting to facilitate them. And we have everything from our wealth management business, which is kind of our rock. He's a financial advisor, oversees many accounts and works with individual clients or nonprofits or corporations. So we have that side of things, some rental properties, our co-working space, a shared workspace, and then my food blog.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, we actually have a kitchen gadget that we invented that we sell on Amazon called the Crumb Catcher.
Wow.
Well, this is what I mean. He's always coming up with something. So.
And how exactly does a crumb catcher work?
Well, the gap between your stove and countertop, that little, it might be, a millimeter thick to like a half an inch.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Stuff falls down there, gets really dirty. It fills the gap. But it's totally invisible. So it self-suspends right in the gap between your stove and countertop, catches all the crumbs, pull it out, every couple of weeks, rinse it out, put it back.
Wow. And so it's easy to install and then take out?
It is. Yeah. It's effortless.
Wow. Do you have one handy there you could show me?
Unfortunately, I don't. This house, we just moved into our house about a year ago. And it has an inlaid stove, so it doesn't need crumb catchers. But at our old house, that's why we invented them, or my husband.
And how is the crumb catcher doing it? Is it
not that well?
Well, come on, people. Crumbs like going on the floor or getting, caught in between your oven and your blank space there.
Yeah, everyone needs a crumb catcher, but no, that's kind of our smallest focus out of everything we do. It just kind of sells a few a day on Amazon.
Wow. And then you have a workspace, a shared workspace. It's kind of like a WeWork or something like that.
Yes, a much smaller version of a WeWork. We have about 45 members, 18 private offices, and then the shared workspace.
Wow. That sounds really, really, really cool. And where did you and your husband meet?
We actually met at my previous place of employment. My first career was as a hair colorist. So he was in the salon that I worked at getting a haircut by another stylist. And that's how we met.
Wow. And so were you like, that guy looks cute? Or what drew him to you?
It was very much the opposite. He pursued me. I thought he was cute for sure, but was not looking for anybody. He was very dedicated to getting to know me, and we finally went on our first date, and he also had a golden retriever. So the rest is history.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. How long have you guys been married?
Our 4-year anniversary is May 25th. So we've been together about 8 years.
Okay. And your parents still live there as well?
Yep. They live, just about 10 minutes away.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. They're wonderful.
Well, it sounds like you've landed in a great place with a great man, close to your parents, with a lot of cool businesses.
Thank you.
Congrats. So I'd love to jump into your food journey a little bit.
Yeah. So
tell me, how did you eat growing up? Did you eat just like, everybody else?
I would say no. And that's a great question because I definitely wasn't plant-based growing up, but I erred on the side of that. Both of my parents are phenomenal cooks. They actually owned a catering company when I was a kid, and they, you know, did all the fresh baked cookies, all the salads, and were both just very talented in the kitchen. And that certainly carried over into our home. While there were animal products in most meals, for sure, everything was made from scratch. We never had like Oreos or Twinkies in the pantry, yeah. And never grew up eating casseroles or canned cream soup, anything like that. So I certainly was, spoiled or given a nice platform to build from in that regard. But lots of vegetables, never enjoyed meat.
Okay. And so that lasted until when? Because I, you know, in reading up on you a little bit, I see that you kind of completely went all in vegan in 2019.
Yeah. So I, as I kind of lightly mentioned, I never enjoyed the taste of meat, so I never really ate it. And I still would incorporate things like some dairy, a little bit of seafood and eggs into my diet until 2019. And that was when I didn't have any major health issues, but just like some digestive issues, a lot of skin breakouts, and really, really bad allergies and asthma. Hmm. And in Iowa, as I kind of mentioned before, with our negative 24 degree days, there's nothing seasonal in bloom in December that I should be allergic to. Obviously, you have, you know, dusts and molds and those sort of things. But for my allergies to be that bad year round, I kind of figured it may be something to do with what I was eating. And that's when I decided to cut out all animal products.
Mm. And so was that the culprit, animal products?
I think it must have been. I mean, I'm no doctor, but as soon as I went vegan, they all went away.
Hmm. Because I see in looking kind of at your new book, mm-hmm. The Clean Vegan, that it's also gluten-free and you have a lot of oil-free options.
Yeah.
Right? You have a little bit of oil here and there, but for the most part, it looks like it's almost all oil-free. So why the gluten-free?
So I actually, when I was in junior high school, tested allergic to wheat. So that is something that I eliminated long ago just for my personal benefit. And I find that when I eat grains or an abundance of gluten, that I just feel a lot of inflammation. Mm. I personally just digest better and live a more comfortable life when I'm not eating gluten.
Yeah. So how does that inflammation present itself to you? Do you feel bloated? Do you feel heavy or what?
Bloated, heavy. I can actually see it in my face. Like it'll be kind of puffy. I'll get a lot of breakouts right in my forehead and on my chin area. And just kind of like, just my body just feels like it kind of aches in the joints.
Yeah. I feel sorry for people that happens to, especially people where it's like celiac, right?
Yeah.
Where it could be potentially, you know, like life threatening.
Dangerous. Yeah. Yes. And that's really severe. Mine, you know, through this process of developing such a clean diet and figuring out how I feel when I'm eating different foods, it's almost like a blessing and a curse. Cause I feel like I'm so in tune with my body that what I feel when I eat gluten or a little bit of dairy, I think many people probably feel that way every day and think they're supposed to feel that way.
Yeah.
That it's just normal. But I am like, okay, wow, I can feel so much better if I don't have those ingredients in my life. Just minor changes that I'll notice.
Yep. I hear you loud and clear there. You know, we're super wheat proud, but we also are doing our best to come up with gluten-free options as well for people that have a gluten sensitivity.
Yeah. Gluten's delicious. I think you should be wheat proud, especially whole grains. I mean, they are so tasty, and the gluten, the stretchy texture of really good bread. I mean, it's just, understand why you love it.
It's nice. But there are so many wonderful gluten-free grains that are out there as well, right?
For
now.
Sure.
And the options are just, you know, lots.
Absolutely.
Now, is this the, where you are right now, is this the 100-year-old house that you're in?
Yes, it'll be 100 years old next year.
Wow. So that means it was built in 1924?
That is correct, yes.
Wow. So this house that I'm in right now was built in 1924.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, yours looks like a little more classy. Mine's basically a little bungalow. Literally, it's a Sears Craftsman bungalow.
Oh, I love it.
You could order it from Sears in 1924 and then put it together. It's like 850 square feet. This used to be the house where that I bought when I was a firefighter and redid it, and where we started our family, and then we moved from, like, oh God, 8 years ago, because, you know, we were busting at the seams.
But you still kept this house.
Yes. And now it's my office.
Okay. And where is it located?
Oh, it's located in downtown Austin.
Okay. Austin.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in Austin, Texas.
I love it. Okay, great. Are you going to have Tennessee. Yeah. Common confusion, I'm sure. Are you going to have a 100th birthday party for your house?
Ooh, you know what? Now that you've mentioned it, I think I shall.
You shall.
Yeah. Are you going to?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you feel like, well, I do feel like this house has a spirit and a soul to it. And I feel the same. Yeah. And, you know, we have three children, and my wife gave birth to all three children here in our bedroom.
Wow.
With a midwife. And so we have a lot of incredible, you know, memories here.
Yeah, it means a lot for sure. That's incredible.
And then especially working on the house. I mean, I spent all my off days when I wasn't at the fire station working on this house, from redoing the foundation, the electrical, the plumbing, tearing down walls, re-gutting the bathroom, you know, you name it.
Right.
So
you put a lot into it.
Put a lot into it. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess I don't know a lot about Sears catalog homes, but I certainly feel like homes were just built differently 100 years ago. Like, you couldn't recreate these today.
No. The shiplap and everything. This is a high quality home. Sears. Yeah. Didn't Sears go out of business a couple of years ago?
I'm certain of it. Yes.
You're okay. Okay. Yeah. I don't know what happened. They must have lost something.
Yeah.
Je ne sais quoi.
That's it for sure.
So let's get back. So you also love to travel. And in fact, you and your husband, what's your husband's name?
Clinton.
Great. So you and Clinton, you got married over in Paris, didn't you?
Southern France. Yes.
Southern France.
Yeah. In the Provence region.
Of course. Yeah. Nice.
Rosé all day. It was very lovely.
Wow. Well,
have you spent much time over there?
I've certainly been over there. In 1995, I did a mini Tour de France. It was in five different cities in 6 days, and we did a triathlon.
Wow.
International distance triathlon in different cities. And we actually ended the whole event on top of the Alpe d'Huez. It's a very famous climb in the Tour de France, you know,
yeah,
22 switchbacks and all that. And then once we got to the top, we had to run a 10K. That was rather brutal.
That's intense for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But so, yes, I have been to France a couple of times. And you've also been to the Caribbean. You love the Caribbean.
Yeah. My husband is a big sailor. We both love to dive. I love to sail as well, but he's been doing both his whole life. So as much as we can be on a sailboat or traveling the world, that's definitely when we're happiest.
Wow. I can see why. And do you have a favorite Caribbean island?
You know, 2 years ago, it was 2021. So still during COVID, but, had lightened up a little bit. We had a 12-day trip to the British Virgin Islands booked with a whole organized itinerary put together by me. And 24 hours before we were supposed to leave, we had to completely pivot because they shut the islands down. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up going to the U.S. side. So St. Thomas, St. John. St. John was very cool.
You gotta go to St. Croix?
We didn't make it over there, no.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole area is beautiful. I think when I love being on land in those islands, but being under the water and diving and on the water, exploring by boat is just a different experience.
How How are you finding the coral reefs to be these days?
Really devastating. It's almost like a graveyard, honestly. It's just, there's so much colorless dead coral. It's very, very sad to see. And I don't know if the areas we were in were just, I mean, I think that's pretty consistent across the globe, but it was kind of a bummer. I'm an eternal optimist through and through. And even I was like, this is not good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's definitely a sign of some serious stuff that's going on right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Although there was a really cool show on Nature just this last Wednesday, and it talked about this one strip, and I can't remember if it was in the Caribbean. I think it might've been in the Caribbean, and it's just as wonderfully robust and alive and colorful as it always has been. And it's something about how deep it is and the temperatures and the way the currents run. And you know, nature is usually very, very optimistic as well. And
yeah,
and how resilient some of these coral reefs are.
Was mostly due to the depth and the temperature?
Depth, temperature, and some the way the currents flow and some other things. Yeah.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll have to watch that.
So I would love to dive into your book.
Yeah, let's do it.
Great. So why did you decide to write a book? What prompted that? Did people push you? Did your husband push you? Parents?
You know, it was something I've always thought would be a wonderful thing to do. When I started doing recipe development, a lot of people, it's, I think, one of the most common questions food bloggers probably get asked, like, okay, when are you going to write a book? Or are you writing a book? Or when's your book coming out? I can't tell you how many times I heard that. So it was always in the back of my mind. And this publishing company actually approached me asking if that was something I would be interested in doing, talking about kind of my passions or visions with developing a book, and kind of knowing that we'd only move forward if we agreed upon a concept that they thought would be beneficial to the market, but also something that I was truly passionate about. And I saw a void for a clean vegan cookbook that has really, really delicious recipes. I feel like sometimes people think clean or healthy vegan eating has to be restrictive or flavorless or doesn't have that like satisfying umami texture or taste or flavor. And I wanted to show people that it can.
Well, you've hit a home run. I mean, I went through this thing in great detail, and there's lots of things I love. So one of the things I love is that it's not overwhelming. Like some of these recipe books, you've got 180 recipes, you've got eight different categories, you know, from snacks to main dishes to, you know, yada, yada. You just have, if I'm not mistaken, four different categories.
Yeah, four or five. Yeah.
I mean, you've got nourishing mains, right? You've got superfood soups and sandwiches.
Yep.
Balanced breakfast, and then you've got your sinless sweets and healthy treats.
Yep.
And right. I just think that it is fantastic. What I also love about this is I think in 2023, just the way we are so visual these days, I think that every recipe and every cookbook
has to have a photo.
If it doesn't, it's like, come on, you're leaving me hanging here. I got to see it, right?
Yes.
And we all know that, you know, eating starts with your eyes.
For sure.
And so this to me is where you just like, oh, incredible. Did you do all the photography in this?
I did. Yep. I did all the photography. And that was actually a make or break for me, that every single recipe had to have a photo for the exact reason you're describing.
Yeah. And Page Street Publishing, your publisher, where are they out of? Do you know?
They are out of Boston and London. They're under Macmillan as their overhead company.
All right. Well, that's great. I mean, it's always nice when somebody reaches out to you.
Yes.
So you having to reach out to them.
Absolutely.
So congrats on that. And how much time did you spend writing the book?
That's a great question. So I signed the contract October of 2021, maybe even a little bit earlier. Submitted my manuscript June of 2022. the first draft, and then all the photos, I think by September of 2022. So it was all within a year.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It was pretty fast tracked.
You got after it.
Yeah. And it was, the way I did it, I tested recipes and concepts for many months, just kind of, you know, any hours of the day when I had time. And then I took a 3-week period, like 21 full days, where I was shooting, making final tests and recipe writing for probably 10, 11 hours every day.
And it probably felt so good to finish this labor of love.
It really did. It really, really did.
Yeah. All right. So if you have your copy in front of you,
I do.
This is what I'd love to do. So I love going through and marking recipes that I personally would like mm-hmm. to try. I mean, of course, I'd like to try every one of them, but for what we're doing here today, that's not realistic. So
right.
I'm going to go through, and then I'd love for you to talk about the recipe that that I bring to your attention.
Okay, let's do it.
I also want to say at the onset how much I love your introduction to every recipe.
Thank you.
I think it's really important that in a recipe book that the author has a little introductory paragraph to let us know why this recipe is included, what it means to them, a little backstory on it. And you've done that fabulously.
Thank you.
So let's start with best ever veggie burgers, because everybody says they have the best veggie burger, right?
That's true.
And looking at this and looking at the ingredients and, you know, like this made the cover of, this is the cover of your
yes.
book, is this. And I want you to know that, you know, it's in my second book, Plan Strong, my cover shot was a burger as
a
well.
Burger.
Yeah.
Which I love. And I don't know about you, but when my publisher and I were deciding for the cover photo, obviously I wanted something really vibrant, really eye-catching, but we were deciding between three different recipes, the burger, first of all, and then this rainbow veggie sandwich on page 72, which is super colorful and vibrant. And then the third option was this grain bowl that was also really colorful. But when it came down to it, I chose the burger because I'm like, okay, that's kind of ironic, kind of amazing. It says the clean vegan, yet it's a big, juicy, saucy burger. And that is kind of like the whole motivation behind my book, to show people that you can eat these delicious recipes, you can have full flavored foods, and they can be totally vegan.
Yeah. So I'm going to go on to another recipe right now.
Yeah.
This is still, we're in the nourishing mains.
Okay.
This is on page 32. This is yellow cauliflower rice with pineapple and cashews. And the reason why I picked this is I never do anything with cauliflower rice. And so, and you talk about it so excitedly that I was drawn to your description of it. And then I love anything that has pineapple and cashews in it as well. And so anyway, this is one that I will make as well.
I cannot wait for you to try it. And it's funny, we have so much in common in that sense. Like if it has pineapples and cashews and even better curry, I'm in.
Oh, oh.
But when I was testing this recipe, the curry pineapple fried rice, my husband typically is not, Clinton, he's not a big cauliflower rice fan. He wants real rice, which is great. So I made one version of it for me with cauliflower rice, one version for him with regular rice, and he actually liked mine better.
Ah.
It had way more flavor. The texture was just as hearty and delicious. I think with the cashews and some of the other veggies in there, it really bulks it up. So you don't miss the grain in there. And it just had so much more flavor. The rice, you know, and I feel this way in a lot of times. Like one reason I always pair a lot of my foods with massage kale versus rice or heavier carbs is because I think that a bland carb sometimes dilutes flavor versus pairing it with a vegetable, which just kind of enhances flavor.
Yeah. And there's a couple of recipes that we're going to talk about here soon where you've done exactly that. And I think that's really smart. So the next recipe I want to go to, Jackie, is on page 39. It's the crispy chipotle jackfruit taquitos, right? And the reason why I'm picking this one is because I haven't counted exactly how many recipes in your book have jackfruit. I think it's two, but because you are Jack, you know, your jackfruit, jackfulness kitchen.
Close enough.
jackfruitful kitchen. I was like, all right, we got to have a recipe that we talk about that has jackfruit. And if you, in fact, like the jackfruit, and I'd love for you to tell me a little bit about the jackfruit and why you are so enamored with it.
Those are all great questions. And yes, I am the jackfruitfulness. It's funny, a couple of my friends actually call me jackfruit, which is pretty cute. But the jackfruit taquitos, if you are, and you're right, I think there's only two recipes in my book that use jackfruit. And it's one of my favorite ingredients because it has such a like fibrous, meaty texture. I'm not sure how much you cook with it, but it really emulates like a pulled shredded chicken or shredded pork. So it's great for you doing like barbecue pulled jackfruit sandwiches in these taquitos. It is so good. These are one of my favorite recipes to make, especially for meat lovers, because they typically, I made these actually for my cookbook launch party. And this guy that I'm friends with, he's actually on an all meat diet right now. So we don't see eye to eye on a lot of things.
I think they call that the lion diet.
Right? It's insane. I'm like, and he'll talk to me about it. Like, I'm going to kind of jump on board. I'm like, talk to me in a few years. Let me know how you're feeling. But anyway, he took a bite of these and he's like, wait, these aren't vegan. These have to be shredded chicken, right? Like, he thought they were actually meat. And I think it's a great ingredient just to kind of emulate that texture that people that do love meat have come to love and crave.
Well, those look dynamite. I don't. So tell me about the jackfruit. Like, what makes the jackfruit so unique? Isn't it like the largest fruit in the world?
Yeah, it's the largest fruit in the world. It can be over 100 pounds and 3 feet long, still grows from a tree. It's insane. Can you imagine walking underneath that at bad timing? I mean, that would be, that could end badly. But so when it's harvested young, it has very little flavor, like almost no flavor. And that's what you want to use for the meat substitutes. So that's typically purchased either canned or frozen or refrigerated. Once the jackfruit is ripe, it is sweeter than a pineapple. I mean, it is so sugar forward, natural sugars, of course, but just so incredibly sweet and used in more desserts. Like, it's almost kind of syrupy, like more like a mango pineapple hybrid. So it's an incredibly diverse fruit. And like I said, the young unripe version is the one you want to use for these meat based or, you know, meat emulating recipes. But
when did you first get introduced to the jackfruit?
It wasn't until you know what? It's actually probably 8 to 10 years ago. Trader Joe's had this pretty killer frozen yellow curry jackfruit recipe. And at that time in my life, I was working like 65 hours a week, just, you know, the easier the ways to get food in my mouth, the better. And so Trader Joe's was a great place to find at that time. I was just, you know, mostly vegetarian, those meals. And they had this jackfruit curry and it was incredible. I couldn't believe it. So that was the first time I experienced it. And then the first recipe I ever made with it personally was a barbecue pulled jackfruit, which is pretty awesome.
It just,
Do you like it?
I've only had it a couple times, and maybe as like a substitute for a, like a barbecue sandwich. You know what I mean? I don't know. I've never thought to buy it frozen. I've never bought a big old thing, 'cause I don't know what I'd do with it. It just doesn't, it doesn't seem very practical to me. So I can't remember the last time I had it.
Yeah. I typically buy the cans.
Okay. And is that a Trader Joe's thing or Whole Foods or what?
Whole Foods, typically. I think I can't remember what brand it is. Native Forest maybe, or Edwards and Sons is the brand I usually buy. But it's super important, and I cover these tips in my book, but to rinse it really well out of the can and then to wrap it in a clean dish towel and squeeze all the excess moisture out of it prior to cooking with it. Otherwise, you might experience a little bit of a brine taste, or just, if you don't squeeze the moisture out before using it in a recipe, it can't take on other flavors. So those are, if you're not loving jackfruit, that's kind of a way to start.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, and I love that you have tips like that for people that are just trying some of these new dishes and giving them some helpful hints. Let's go to page 51 and do the impossible. So
you like my puns?
I do. Oh, and I forgot the first one for the best burger ever. You said that it is a bun in a million.
You know, it's funny. I wrote these so long ago that it's kind of like I'm hearing that for the first time, and it still makes me giggle. And that burger, it really is bun in a million. I think I cut out earlier, but we had it last night with some friends, and the my meat loving friend that we were with last night, even he was like, "This is the best veggie burger I've ever had." So.
All right, I'll try it for sure. So, page 51, this grain-free rigatoni with a lentil bolognese sauce. You know, I love pasta. I love lentils. Just the way this thing looks, it looks so hearty, you know, meaty, flavorful, a lot of umami. Talk to me.
That's exactly everything you just covered was my exact goal. And those lentils just give it such a meaty texture. This is another one. So when I was developing these recipes, my opinion is great, I usually think. And then Clinton's opinion, you know, he likes some things that I don't, and vice versa. But I wanted to have a really wide set of differing tastes and opinions, and some meat eaters, some fellow vegetarians, some vegans, et cetera. And this was one that I specifically gave it to people that I know eat a pretty meat forward diet, and they were enamored by it. Just the exact, like you said, because typically what meat eaters miss in a vegan meal is that umami, savory, like mouth watering kind of fat content. And the way these ingredients come together with the mushrooms and the lentils, it's incredibly meaty and flavor rich.
Yeah. I love my mouth is literally watering, but I'm looking at the, what kind of pasta is that? Is that like, what's that shape and that size?
Rigatoni.
Called? Rigatoni. Okay. Yes. And of course it's in the title of the
I wasn't going to call you out.
Well, you know what? You have to start calling me out. Iowa, Idaho, Rick, please do.
I love it.
But it just, I can just feel it going into my mouth and how it just, you know, takes up space, and it's wonderful.
Thank you. I can't wait for you to try it.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to move on now to superfood soups and sandwiches. I think growing up on Sundays, my mother would always have sandwiches and soups for lunch. Mm-hmm. So it when I see this, it immediately made me think of growing up in Cleveland, Ohio, and either soups or sandwiches for lunch on Sunday.
Wait, you're from Ohio?
Yes.
And yeah. You confused Iowa and Idaho when Ohio is typically looped into the mix. Yeah,
I think it's important that we go back and discuss that. No, for some reason, my brain just was thinking Idaho from the very beginning. I saw the I, and I just thought Idaho, not Iowa.
Yeah.
So, hey. So
Sunday soups at home.
Yes. So anyway, so let's dive in. I'm going to start on page 61. It's your cucumber melon gazpacho with pine nut pico. And this, people, look at this photo. For people that are just listening, you'll have to go and check it out on YouTube because it's worth it. I just think it looks so absolutely gorgeous. And I am not a gazpacho, type of person. And you even start out by saying, if you don't like chilled soups, believe me, you're about to love chilled soups. So yeah, why am I going to love this soup?
You know, it's funny. I've had so many people tell me they don't love chilled soups, and then they try this and they're obsessed. It is just, it's so delicious. And I don't like a chunky chilled soup. I like a pureed chilled soup with a garnish like I've done here. And the blend in this of the honeydew melon, the tomatillos, the fresh cucumber, there's herbs, there's citrus, garlic, ginger. I mean, it's just so flavor forward. It's like smoothies better cousin. It's just a little bit savory. But still really fresh and light. And it's just the perfect summer dish.
And I'm looking, like, obviously the green, it's the honeydew, the basil, the mint, the avocado, the cucumber.
Yep, bell pepper. Oh, yeah, and the avocado, kind of forgetting some of the ingredients here, but the avocado kind of adds that fat content that people typically, sometimes gazpacho is pretty oil forward. It'll contain, you know, maybe a half cup of olive oil in four servings. But this, the fat content comes from avocado. So it's really silky.
Yeah. So you mentioned oil there. Obviously, you probably know that I'm not a fan of oil.
Right.
Why are you not a fan of oil?
I would say for the same reasons as you. I think it's, first of all, it's incredibly easy to cook without it. I think it's a great way to eliminate a very processed ingredient and a lot of calories. You know, it's crazy when you think about, say, you're sauteing something. Oftentimes, I still will use a little bit, maybe like a teaspoon or two of avocado oil or cold-pressed olive oil to get started. But then anytime I need to deglaze, it's either vegetable broth or water. And if you think, conversely, if you're just glugging on more oil every time, the amount of calories and saturated fat you're adding and just excess heavy processed ingredients, I just don't love it.
Yeah, I think the key word there was glugging.
Yeah.
Glugging on more oil. It just doesn't.
It's a technical term.
No, it is. It is. It does not sound good.
No.
All right, good. All right, let's move on because I got several more I want to here. So on page 67, I am such a chili guy. This is a hearty three bean quinoa chili. Here's the photo of it right there. You can see it. And what got me with this one is not only the photo, but when you mentioned how in your intro, this is a mic drop recipe. I mean, talk to me.
It's one of those chilies. Well, here, I'll tell you this. We actually had a chili cook-off at our office, our shared workspace that we were talking about earlier. We had a chili cook-off back in October, and there were 8 different chilies. I made this one. We did not label them, so no one knew it was vegan, and my chili won.
Wow.
And it was really funny because everyone had already voted. Or one person had not voted yet, and he was sitting over there sampling the last chilies. And Clinton, my husband, asked him which one he was going to vote for. And he's like, oh, you can't say, because we haven't announced the winner. And he's like, oh, I already know. It's obviously number 3. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you picked the vegan one. And he's like, wait, that one's vegan? Can I change my vote? It was hilarious. Like, he was kind of being funny and playful about it. But no one knew that it was a vegan chili because it's just that satisfying with the quinoa and the beans and the vegetables. It's delicious.
Wow. Well, so it sounds like you're a connoisseur of chilies.
Yeah.
And so what I'd like to do probably in the next 2 or 3 weeks, I want to send you a care package.
Okay.
So we're coming out with 6 new chilies and stews.
Amazing.
That we're going to commercialize. And I'll send you a care package and I want you to let me know your favorites. But we've got a black bean. We've got a sweet and smoky. We've got a chunky chipotle. We've got a kind of a lentil bolognese. A lentil berbere. So yeah.
All those sound delicious.
Well, your hearty three bean quinoa. All right, let's move on. And this is, I've got a version of this sandwich in 2 of my cookbooks, but yours, the reason I was so drawn to this one is because of your title. And this is it. It is your no tuna to sea here sandwich. And of course, sea is spelled S-E-A, right? Another one of your puns.
Always.
And this looks creamy, tangy. Anything, what else can you tell me about this?
It's both those things. It's creamy, it's tangy, it has those capers in it, which give that tanginess. It has a little bit of nori flakes, so seaweed, to kind of provide that oceany taste that you typically get from tuna. The tahini is a great creamy base that's paired with those roughly mashed chickpeas. It's just a really satisfying tuna salad that even tuna salad lovers will love.
Yeah, this is one that I definitely am going to try. I'm going to move on now to, let's go into glowing greens.
Okay.
We are a huge fan of greens at Plant Strong. We want people to have greens 3 times a day at least. But what I'm going to start with is jicama and citrus salad with super green cilantro dressing. And what drew me to this one was not only jicama, because you're right, I think jicama is fantastic and not enough people use it, but also I am such a fan of oranges and grapefruits in salads, and you've done both here. And so just like wow me right now with your description of this salad.
So this salad is one that not only is it incredibly flavorful, the dressing, this dressing is made from cilantro, oranges, lime juice, ginger. So it's incredibly flavorful and just coats the ingredients with a lot of subtle sweetness and acidity, but it also has those hearty textures. You have the creamy avocado paired with the juicy citrus that you mentioned, the oranges and avocado, and then that jicama. For those of you that haven't tried jicama, it is one of my favorite ingredients, whether I'm using it as a carrier for dips or slicing it thinly like this for salads. It's the texture of kind of like an apple or radish, but subtly sweet, really mild, but just a perfect crunch amongst the other ingredients, and great carrier for the dressing.
Mm, yeah. So I'm moving on to page 98. And so if there's one thing I can't get enough of these days, it's roasted cauliflower. Ah. And so whether it's steaks or whatever, and when I saw this roasted cauliflower salad with dates and a tahini sauce, I just fell in love, because it's also, a lot of people don't know this, but cauliflower is also another great way to get your leafy greens, right? It's part of that family.
A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah. And so to make our endothelial cells really fire out that nitric oxide. So tell me about this, because I love that it's paired with dates, right? Give it a great sweetness, the roasted cauliflower, and then this tahini sauce. It just sounds so healthy and comforting, like hold me back.
Yeah, it's exactly that. And it's funny because this has kind of become a fan favorite, which I didn't necessarily expect that people would gravitate towards this one so strongly, but I'm getting, weekly, if not daily, messages about the love for this recipe and people saying, hey, I just ate the entire bowl myself. Is that okay? Because it is, like you said, hold me back. It is just that good. The cauliflower has like perfectly charred edges and like a bit of an earthy taste. The dates add this wonderful sweetness in every bite, and mixed with the warm cauliflower, they soften just a little bit. The sunflower seeds add that earthy crunch, and then the tahini dressing to finish it off is just like chef's kiss.
Mm. What was that? Chef's kiss?
Yes.
So that gets the chef's kiss of approval. Good.
Yes.
So now we're moving on to balanced breakfast. And I think of every meal of the day, my favorite time is breakfast. Something about, waking up. I'm always hungry. I can't wait to dig in. Some of my favorite things I'm going to ask you about right now. One, every Sunday morning, I make pancakes for my whole family. And you start out with power-packed blueberry pancakes. And what really got me about this one is I always look at ingredients when I see pancakes. And the first ingredient was silken tofu. And I'm like, okay, I got to know why silken tofu is in a pancake recipe. So
let's talk about it.
Let's do it.
I was actually just going to ask you if you've ever tried silken tofu in a pancake.
No.
Okay. So think about tofu. It's kind of fluffy and light and silky. Think about pancakes. You want it to be super fluffy. So adding the tofu to the pancakes not only adds to the fluffiness and a little bit of fat content, but it also adds a lot of protein. So you take something that, if you're making like a whole grain pancake, I'm sure it has a lot of protein and fiber. But if you're thinking of a traditional buttermilk pancake dredged in butter and probably not even real maple syrup, there's not a lot of nutritional value or protein there. So I wanted to create something that was the antithesis of that, with a protein forward, fiber rich pancake that was just as delicious as the real deal.
I mean, look at this. You've got a stack of six pancakes here, Jackie. So please tell me these didn't just get thrown out. Tell me somebody.
Oh, no. We ate all of them. That was one big thing in my recipe shooting, that I did not want to have any food waste. I could not tolerate it. So I not only had people scheduled every single day to pick up the food. They had their only requirement was they had to reuse the containers or give them back. Wow. And they had to give feedback. They had to answer 5 questions about the recipe they tested. But then these pancakes just went right into Clinton and my belly, because they were that good.
What's your favorite thing to put on top of pancakes when you make pancakes?
I am kind of a classic girl. I love like grade A maple syrup, but like a fluffy coconut yogurt and more fresh fruit is in a little like flaxseed or hemp seed. Mm-hmm. How about also, you?
You know what? It's interesting. I typically put banana slices in my pancakes, along with just a little bit of dark chocolate chips.
Yum.
And I literally just eat them with my hand. I don't typically put anything on top of them. I just put them on a plate and then I eat them with my hand.
For sure.
So that's typically how I do it these days. Yeah, I don't go the maple syrup route. Back in the day, I would do applesauce. For a while there, I was doing peanut butter, right?
I was going to say peanut butter, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to talk about peanut butter in a second. Okay. I could die in a big vat of peanut butter.
Happily.
Very happy. Yeah. All right. Let's move on. So page 111, Jackie, best ever tofu scramble with massage kale and avocado. So this to me, you know, I just saw the how you paired these two. And one of my favorite things really when I'm not doing pancakes is a tofu scramble. And sometimes I love that tofu scramble for dinner. We make it for dinner. And the way you've paired it though with kale as opposed to a grain, which we were talking about earlier, to kind of take on the flavors and the avocado here. But what makes yours better than mine?
Well, I don't know that it's better than yours because I haven't tried yours, but I would say that
What makes yours better? Let me know.
It's all in the preparation. You're scrambling the tofu first, getting some charred edges and a little crispiness, but then you're pouring in this, I don't want to call it a coating, but like a chickpea flour, nutritional yeast, and plant milk based seasoning sauce that then the tofu absorbs after it's gotten a little bit crispy, and it takes on that black lava salt and slightly cheesy umami flavor for a super eggy taste and a really satisfying texture.
Wow. I think you may just have me there. When you talked about the chickpea flour and the eggy taste. And let me see if you have it in here. So tell me this, do you like extra firm or super firm or like mega firm?
So for tofu scrambles, I like extra firm, but pretty much every other area of life that requires tofu, which are many moments, I do super firm.
Except for the desserts and the pancakes.
Yeah, true.
We like the silken, which is, for those of the people that have never heard of silken, can you describe like how it's different?
Yeah. So silken tofu is, and correct me if I'm wrong here. So firm, extra firm, high protein, super firm tofu is all kind of coagulated or curdled, where the silken tofu has a higher water content and it's just kind of thickened, correct?
Yes, that all sounds good. And it's super light and it's almost like a pudding almost.
Yeah, it is the texture of pudding or like a cheesecake almost. Well, probably more like pudding, but just super silky, really delicate.
And it's really ideal for desserts. I haven't had it before. Sometimes in the house, and I try using a medium or a super firm for a dessert, and it just bombs every time.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
There is a time and place for silken tofu, like pancakes and desserts.
Yes. What can you tell me about this massage kale that you have in here? Anything?
It's life-changing.
Okay. All right.
And it's actually, if you flip back to page, the very first salad in my
glowing
greens. Yeah. Is life-changing massage kale.
Yeah.
And there's a whole write-up on it because it's so funny. Like when you massage kale, it really is life-changing. You'll go from thinking it's a rigid, bitter garnish on your plate at your parents' favorite restaurant to wanting it with every meal because it's just that delicious. It's so tender, sweet, juicy, adds a lot of – and that's one of the few recipes I typically do just a tiny touch of oil on. Oil, lemon juice. But we're talking like a half teaspoon of avocado or olive oil for the whole recipe. But it's just a wonderful complement to almost any dish.
What's your trick to massaging the kale? Do you do it with your hands, with tongs? Yes,
with my hands. So I remove the spines of the kale. Typically, I sometimes save those for smoothies or juicing. Chop it finer than you think. I like smaller pieces of kale. And then adding, like for one bunch of kale, I'll do a whole lemon juiced and a half teaspoon of olive oil. Uh-huh. And just massage it for about 15 to 30 seconds until you'll see the leaves become shiny. They become more pliable, kind of reduce in size, and just it becomes so delicious. I could just eat it straight.
Yeah. My mother loves saying that kale is spinach with heft.
Yeah. I love that your mom says that. That's amazing. It's spinach with heft.
Spinach with heft. Spinach with an attitude.
Spinach with an attitude. I like it.
Yeah. All right. So Carrie's heard me say this a lot. Carrie's the producer of the podcast, everybody, that I think in another life I was a horse because I love oats that much. And this is why I have to ask you about strawberry, banana, zucchini, and oat nourish bowls right here. I mean, I never ever would have thought to add zucchini, and you say you do it to all your oat bowls. Tell me why.
So I love oats. I also, sometimes for breakfast, I like to eat a bigger bowl without feeling too weighed down. And I think if you, to get as many oats as I want in my bowl, I end up feeling a little bit heavy afterwards. So shredded zucchini adds a lot of volume to your oats.
Yeah.
You're not going to taste it at all. And it has a super low caloric density, and it's very low in carbs and nutrient rich. So it's a phenomenal way to sneak in veggies, get more food on your plate, and more fiber, just, and they're delicious.
And how do you, do you shred it up, or how do you do it in there? Yeah.
Shred it really finely, add it in right when you're cooking, and it just, it's, you won't even know it's there.
So in watching some of your videos on your Instagram channel and watching you chop, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my gosh, she can chop like an absolute pro.
Thank you.
I've seen Derek and Chad Sarnow chop, and these guys are like, you know, machines, and you are right up there with them. How did you get to become such a proficient chopper upper?
You know, I appreciate that. That's the nicest thing that anyone's ever said to me, and I accept. and I'll tell you this. And when I was a kid growing up, I was always on salad duty. I remember I complained about it once. My mom was like, okay, would you rather set the table? And I was like, no, I will stick with salad duty. So I was always chopping all the veggies for salads. And I grew up working with knives and learning, you know, knife safety and how to prep different veggies. And I just love it.
Mm. And then I saw you in one of your videos, you also were using, and I'm not going to get the name of this correctly. So it's right up there with Idaho and Iowa and rigatoni for the day. But was it a mandolin that you were using?
Yes.
To slice something, and you did it so fast. I was like, wow.
I may have had it sped up, but maybe it wasn't me.
No, you didn't.
Okay.
It was all you.
Well, the mandolin makes it so easy. So especially if I'm making pickled onions, I want those to be pretty consistently sliced and really thin. So they get nice and tender and flavorful. And then also like radishes, jicama, those are things I love to use the mandolin for, that just save you time and just make it really consistent across the board.
Now, I don't want to spend too much time on this one, but I saw it and I just was like, oh, I really would like a bite of that. And that's your eggless spinach artichoke quiche with an almond flour crust. This one right here. And you talk about how you got so inspired when you were, I think maybe it was on your honeymoon with your husband in France. And you're like, oh my gosh, I can make something just as good that doesn't have the eggs and all the other contraband. And here flows right here.
Contraband. I love it. That one is so delicious. We actually made it Christmas morning this last year with my husband's family. And it is so good. The almond flour crust. I love almond flour for a crust. I know you're a big wheat guy, but that almond crust just had like a hearty, slightly crumbly, but dense texture that pairs perfectly with the light eggy texture. Artichokes in there are just a really nice addition for both texture and flavor. Mm. And it's just beautiful.
Yeah. No, it looks divine. So speaking of divine, if you're cool with it, I'm going to move into sinless sweets and healthy treats. Yeah. And you have several, but I'm only going to talk to you about three.
Okay.
So the first one is, this is probably, my mother could eat If these yield 16 bars, my mother could eat every one of them. And it's the first one. It's the lemon ginger bars with almond flour, shortbread crust. Look at these. It are just so gorgeous.
Thank you.
And what do I want to ask you about this? It's like, I don't know. Can you send me a box?
I don't know how well these would ship, but yeah, I'll try that. They're delicious. And honestly, what sets them apart from other lemon bars, besides being totally plant-based, refined sugar-free, oil-free, is the ginger. It adds such a nice, subtle piece of interest and extra flavor and depth to it. That's just really surprising.
Piece of interest. That's an interesting way of phrasing that. It does. And it gives it a little bit of, when I think of ginger, I think of, it's just a little hint of heat.
Yeah.
Hint of heat and then a little pop. And it's just gingery. It's very cool. Very refreshing.
Yes.
All right, let's go on. I'm on page 139 here. It's the ultimate fudgy grain-free brownies. All right, look at this. And those of you that know me know that besides peanut butter, my other big thing is chocolate.
And you need these in your life now.
Yeah. And so what makes these so absolutely special besides, and I don't mean to steal some of your thunder, the avocado, the balsamic vinegar, and the coffee that's in these?
Yeah, that's it. They are so fudgy and rich. And I don't know about you, but whenever I was making like boxed brownies growing up, it was like, if they said to bake for 24 minutes, I was baking for like 18 or 19. Like, I want them to be fudgy and dense and gooey. Nobody wants a cakey brownie. And these are just all of that. And then some. The avocado adds a nice silky fat content that's phenomenal. Two different chocolate sources. So really rich and deep on the chocolate flavor. And then the raw cacao and coffee and balsamic, all three add a depth that just enhances that chocolate flavor. It's really delicious.
Where did you learn to bake?
So my mom is like a all-star baker. She is, when they had their catering company, it was her chocolate chip cookie recipe that skyrocketed them to success. So I've been baking my whole life, and I've learned everything I know from her.
Well, but you also say that you've learned a lot in the kitchen from your father, especially around breakfast.
Yeah, but not with baking. That's not his area. Okay. But yeah, breakfast is my dad's specialty. He is every morning. I mean, he starts with a grapefruit. Then he either has oatmeal or granola. Then he has like, an omelet or a veggie scramble or something. He has like a 3-course breakfast. I love it.
Yeah. All right. We're going to end the breakfast here with the dark chocolate covered flourless peanut butter cookies, because
these are wild.
Yeah, right here. And I don't know. I just know that you combine the two.
So your two favorite things.
And I'm a sucker. Yes.
They are so good. The peanut butter cookies are so chewy and perfectly salted. And then, yeah, that chocolate coating, whether you do it or not, which we all know that you would choose to, it is just a perfect pairing.
And do you have a favorite peanut butter that you like to use when you use peanut butter?
I oftentimes use, what is it called? Saint, I have it at Whole Foods, Green Label. Mm-hmm. I'm blanking on it, but glass jar, Green Label, green lid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Organic, no other ingredients besides organic roasted peanuts and a pinch of sea salt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I try and get peanut butter that just has one ingredient. So that's roasted peanuts. And I'm amazed these days how they have these stir-free peanut butter, but they've got sugar. They've got high palm oil in them. It's just,
I know. It's crazy. And then people get addicted to that because the hyperpalatization, because they want that extra sugar, that extra fat, and that extra salt. And then they don't end up liking natural peanut butter because their mind and body have tricked them into being addicted to sugar.
No, sugar and that even excessive amount of fat from the palm oil. And you said it perfectly when you said the hyperpalatization, which is exactly what they're going for. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the convenience of, I don't have to get my
spend 30 seconds stirring.
I don't have to get the oil out running down the side of the peanut butter jar and on my hand. I don't have to go to the sink and mess with all that.
Yeah. They've definitely hit on people's pain point there, but it's, come on, people.
Yeah, they have. So how much do you think that you love sumos more than I do?
Oh, yes. Is this I don't know if this is a fight you want to have. I for sure love sumos more.
You think so? I saw you on one of your Instagram videos coming into the house with, I think it was 6 boxes of sumos because you said, you know, sumo season is almost over. But, you know, the other day I came into my house with 7.
Okay. You may have me there on quantity, but the love is deep.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are special. And it's funny because any person that I get hooked on them, they're like, okay, wow. Yeah, you're right. I'm never eating a regular orange or a clementine or a tangerine again, because this is just next level juiciness, sweetness. And I just love sumos.
I do too. Although I got to tell you, to be quite honest, that lately, the last couple batches that I've gotten have been a little dry, and they haven't had that typical sumo like specialness to them.
Wow factor.
Yeah.
I also noticed that this year, very early season in January, they were kind of dry. And then I typically find like the last week or two of April that they're available. Mm. They're a touch dry.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
so Jackie, this has been an absolute blast. Really,
I agree.
I've enjoyed getting to know you. I've enjoyed the fact that you do actually live in Iowa and not Idaho. I don't think I'll ever make that mistake again. And I'm just so, so happy for you and the launch of this fabulous cookbook, the Clean Vegan Cookbook, 60 whole food plant-based recipes to nourish your body and your soul. Jackie Ackerberg, huge congrats.
Thank you. So
Jackie, anything you'd like to say before we depart?
Super grateful for you having me on. This has been super great talking to you. Had a blast. And yeah, I appreciate you highlighting so many recipes in my book. It's a great collection of 60 of my favorite recipes that you won't find anywhere else on my blog and on my Instagram. I am sharing other recipes often, and other tips and tricks like how to use a mandolin or how to slice a cauliflower. But this is my most recent and curated collection of my favorites. So thank you so much.
And tell people, where can they go to find you on your different platforms?
Yeah. So on Instagram, I'm Jack Fruitful Kitchen, and I post there daily different tips, tricks, recipes. On my website, my blog, it's jackfruitful.com. And that is where I do offer printable recipes, as well as I have 2 different 4-week meal plans. So if you're new to a plant-based diet or just want to simplify plant-based eating and reduce food waste and reduce your time spent in the kitchen, those meal plans are a great way to tackle that. And then my book can be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Whole Foods, really anywhere books are sold.
Wow. Fabulous, Jackie. Fabulous. So will you hit me with a Plant Strong fist on the way out?
Absolutely.
Boom.
Love it.
Keep it plant strong.
Love it. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, Jackie's book is called The Clean Vegan Cookbook, and Jackie's website is jackfruitful.com. I'll be sure to link up to it in the show notes. Until next time, live a fruitful life and always keep it plant strong. Thank you for listening to the Plant Strong podcast. You can support the show by taking a quick minute to follow us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Leaving us a positive review and sharing the show with your network is another great way to help us reach as many people as possible with the exciting news about plants. Thank you in advance for your support. It means everything. The Plant Strong podcast team includes Carrie Barrett, Lori Kordowich, Amy Mackey, Patrick Gavin, and Wade Clark. This season is dedicated to all of those courageous truth seekers who weren't afraid to look through the lens with clear vision and hold firm to a higher truth. Most notably, my parents, Dr. Caldwell B. Esselstyn Jr. and Ann Cryle Esselstyn. Thanks for listening.